to everyone. As soon as you are all settled, you can be able to proceed with the meeting. Good morning again, and welcome everyone, and a special welcome to the Public Service Commissioners that are present. Honourable members will be proceeding with the meeting. As we normally do, I will just table the apologies that are before me here. I believe only one apology was received. Okay. Okay, it's from the Minister for Public Safety and Administration, Minister Roy Padiyadi. I know the members haven't met him ever since he became the new minister, and I know there was that request that we want to see him appearing some other time. We will actually try and make sure that maybe the last meeting before we adjourn as committees, we find the minister. Okay, but we do have an apology. As you know, our meeting sits on a very awkward day, which is a Wednesday. There are committees for cabinet, like cabinet days and so on, and therefore we will really accommodate that at this point in time. So, honourable members, with that apology, I want to say that on our agenda, we've got the briefing by the Public Service Commission on the state of the public service report and other public service reports tabled in Parliament. We did discuss with the Public Service Commission. It is a specific report, which is the second item, and we are agreeing that at this point in time, we will start with the state of the public service approach to the report, and therefore we will actually leave everything to the hands of the Public Service Commission to proceed in terms of how are they sort of looking into that aspect. And they do have that liberty today to take us through in terms of how they are thinking and how they are are willing to approach this aspect, a very important aspect for the committee and a major issue for discussion, but also one issue that one would appreciate how the Public Service Commission is willing to meet the committee also in terms of the expectations. And we really want to appreciate that from the side of Parliament and from the side of the Public Service Commission's willingness to work with the committee. Okay. So, honourable members, without any waste of time, we will proceed. But I just need to request the members that we do have some specific issues that we have to discuss about this morning. I'm sure most of you are aware. I was meeting with the Chair of Chairs this morning. Precisely because of the issues that are quite burning from the side of the committee in terms of our work. One issue would be the study tour, the other issue would be the public service seminar. And I think we're going to conclude those aspects today. But also, because the last meeting that we're going to have, honourable members, it is focusing on the public service seminar. I must indicate that we will therefore discuss that whole approach before we get to next week's meeting, where we'll be outlining that public service seminar. But just to indicate that our last week's meeting have actually changed the shape or complemented our approach, because the minister in the presidency has presented the NPC report, and it links and sort of collaborates quite well with the work that we're doing, and therefore that meeting was all about that approach and a fully fledged project. But we've got a lot of work to deal with prior. Can I then request that members shouldn't leave so that we finalize those aspects, because there's quite some issues that we need to really confront and talk about. Okay, in that note, I'll request that you proceed. Can I then request, I'm seeing the chairperson for the Public Service Commission present here, as the leader of the delegation, to be able to introduce us to all the commissioners. I know some of the members do know all the commissioners, but it's important for us to get a reintroduction and an introduction to those that I knew, so that we really know whom are we working with, because the Public Service Commission is an entity that we work with quite closely, and therefore that relationship had always been very close. I'll hand over to yourself, Chairperson of the Public Service Commission, Mr. Ben Mtem.
Thank you very much, the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, and I want also to say to honourable members who appreciate this opportunity to interact with the Portfolio Committee. But before we proceed, I will just make a short introduction as requested. Next to me is our Deputy Chairperson, Commissioner Tengeni, I'm sorry. No, that was delivery. Commissioner Tengeni from KZN. She's also a resident commissioner in the KZN offices. And then we also have a Commissioner Nzimande, who joined the commission on the 15th of August, and then she has also been appointed as a convener for monitoring and evaluation. And then we're having two officials. Firstly, we have Kobus van der Merwe, who is the Chief Director for Monitoring and Evaluation, and he will be responsible for the presentation on the fact sheet on the state of the public service. And then we've got Matar Mashu, who is the Chief Director for the branch leadership and management practices. Specifically, she is responsible for for labor relations improvement. Chairperson, this is the team that we are having. Now, coming now to the presentations. Firstly, we'll make a presentation on the fact sheet on the state of the Public Service Commission, and I'll make some few introductory remarks. And thereafter, I will request our deputy thereafter to make some few introductory remarks on the report which we have tabled to you regarding the management of a of the precautionary suspension. Now, coming now to the fact sheet on the state of the public service. Now, as the chairperson of the portfolio committee has rightly pointed out, it is important that we should put this in its proper context. The committee will recall that in the ATC of the 20th of April 2011, the committee reported on its findings as well as recommendations regarding the 2010 State of the Public Service report. And then the portfolio committee noted quite a number of serious weaknesses, or shall I say, criticism with regard to the manner in which the state of the public service is actually presented in terms of the methodology or the approach, so to speak. Now, the committee noted the following. Firstly, that it was quite a bit not happy with the thematic approach. The reason being that now, from year in and year out, you find that the theme changes, and as a result, there's no consistency with regard to the variables or the question of the indicators that are being used that keep on changing. And as a result, it is not that meaningful or user-friendly for the portfolio committee in conducting its oversight responsibility. And therefore, it felt very strongly that there is a need that there must be a uniformity and consistency in terms of indicators, so that now we're able to, so that it will be more meaningful and useful in terms of tracking trends rather than imagining whether we're making progress or we're not making progress towards the realization of the vision of the public service that is actually outlined under Section 195. And then secondly, the portfolio committee also noted that now, if we talk of the state of the public service, actually it is not complete in the sense that we only concentrate on two spheres, that is the national departments as well as the provincial departments. But in terms of Section 195(2), it says that now the values and principles under Section 195 are applicable to all spheres of government, that is including local government. It also applicable to all organs of state as well as public entities. Now, the fact that now our report only covers, you know, the two spheres in terms of the Public Service Act, it is not sufficient, and therefore it does not give a true picture of what exactly is the state of the public service. Now, lastly, there was a strong sense that now there is a need that the Public Service Commission should come with a very conclusive, a definite, conclusive report, just like the Auditor General, in making some announcement about the state of the public service, which will be more meaningful. Now, these reports was received for these recommendations and these issues pointed out by the portfolio committee, we felt very strongly that now there is a lot of sense in what it has been said. And given the fact that now the portfolio committee on public service and administration is one of our key stakeholders, in fact, we account to Parliament through this portfolio committee. And if it is having such serious concerns about our report, what will be the purpose of continuing with the same approach which we've already started, whereas now it's not going to make sense to them. So we therefore decided now for the State of the Public Service report for 2011, which of course was based on the old theme approach and was also limited to two spheres, of course, local government to a certain extent, but it does not entail especially public entities. We therefore felt that now let us put a halt and let us engage the public, the portfolio committee, our some of the concerns that we're having and some of the practicalities in terms of implementing it. So now in that context, we then engage with the portfolio committee. I think I did meet with the chairperson of the portfolio committee. I did express some concerns, especially the issue of capacity, because if we were to engage the whole of the public service broadly, it has got implications financially as well as human resources, and that we feel that probably we need to take this, you know, in a phase stage until as and when we build capacity in terms of the finances as well as in terms of human resources, will then move forward towards the realization of ensuring that there is a true a report on the state of the public service as envisaged and as proposed by the portfolio committee. Now, that being the case, we therefore felt that now, instead of carrying on with the old approach, we'll rather produce a fact sheet. Now, a fact sheet and the state of the public service, the main difference is the fact that now, with a fact sheet, it's simply a presentation of the facts around the nine values and principles, as well as schematic representations or statistical information, just to give an eye-based view of what is the state of the public service. And then it also relies heavily on indicators. And to that extent, we have relied mainly on 33 indicators that have been used to assess each and every one of these principles. So that is what we are having. Now, there was a strong sense from the portfolio committee that although we've not as yet, you know, tabled this fact sheet as we normally do, but rather we'll be in a position just to indicate to what extent or what is the picture around the Public Service Commission. So in other words, this is work on progress. We are about to finish it, although it's covered a lot of ground, but we still have to cover it and then we still have to present it formally as we normally do. And it will give a sense, you know, of the state of the public service in the form of a fact sheet. And we hope this will be in compliance with the request of the portfolio committee. But we want us to assure the portfolio committee that in terms of the suggestions which have been made by them, in our last strategic planning session, we contemplated on the mandate of the portfolio committee, and we sought for various legal opinions, and we're quite convinced that now there is no uniformity even among constitutional experts, etc. And we're therefore convinced that now, in the absence of anyone challenging us, we think that what the committee is saying we need to do, we're just exactly going to do it, because there is no unanimity even within the legal fraternity as to interpreting the mandate. So now, this is our view, and we think that is in line with the thinking of the portfolio committee. We also took note of the fact that on the 15th of this month, that is last week, this recommendation was adopted by Parliament. It is a reality. So we are having a strong backing. You know, whoever will be challenging us would in fact be challenging Parliament. So we are quite happy on that, and we want to assure the committee that we will do our best to ensure that we have the state of the public service, which is in line with Section 1952. And we hope that now the resolution which was passed by Parliament last week, which also ensures that now the portfolio, I mean the Public Service Commission, will fall under Parliament, will improve our situation in terms of resources so that we are able to do our work. And we also appreciate the fact that now, in terms of that resolution, it is quite clear that it puts on the Speaker of Parliament to ensure that all the reports of the Public Service Commission are actually being channeled to the relevant portfolio committees for serious consideration, so that now once they are adopted by Parliament, it then becomes the responsibility of the portfolio committee, which now will make our external teeth to have a more bite to the various executives, because that has been a weakness in the past. We make reports, we rely on the two sets of external two sets of teeth, one provincial legislature and the one big one, you know, that is Parliament. So that this resolution actually will give teeth to the portfolio committee, and indirectly will also ensure that our work as the Public Service Commission have really are meaningful in terms of holding the executive and ensuring that we move towards the realization of the public service as envisioned under Section 195. So I want to assure the committee that we are quite pleased with this development, and we will keep on ensuring that the relationship is healthy, relationship which at times there is this healthy tension is absolutely good for our democracy and absolutely good for the promotion of good governance. So that in short, Chairperson and honorable members, are just the issues I wanted to put forward. With that in mind, I will then ask our Chief Director, Cobus van der Merwe, to make a presentation on the fact sheet on the state of the public service. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, for portfolio committee members. Thanks for this opportunity. The first slide just sketched the background as the Chairperson of the Public Service Commission has just done now, so I need not repeat that. So I will go directly, because the rest of the presentation is structured according to the nine values in Section 195 of the Constitution, so I will go directly into that part of the presentation. The first value is a high standard of professional ethics should be maintained in the public service. Now, recently the Department of Public Service and Administration has done an audit of implementation of the policy on minimum anti-corruption capacity. And one of the findings there is that 84% of departments had an anti-corruption policy, but only 47% of the departments had compiled implementation plan. Now that audit was based on about 130 indicators, so it was quite an intensive audit of this minimum anti-corruption capacity. The departments who scored higher than 80% was the South African Revenue Service, the Department of Trade and Industry, the Department of Correctional Services, the Department of Cooperative Governance, the National Prosecuting Authority. Now, the departments who have scored well all had dedicated anti-corruption or integrity management units. Going to the next indicator, if we measure departments' response to the National Anti-Corruption Hotline administered by the office, by the Public Service Commission, since its inception, 7,922 cases have been received. The Commission has received feedback on 2,948, and the number of closed cases is 1,800. Now, the strategy to refer cases reported on the National Anti-Corruption Hotline to departments for investigation That strategy is premised on the assumption that the department has the capacity to investigate those cases. And the feedback rate on the National Anti-Corruption Hotline suggests that departments do not have that capacity. And that is corroborated by the audit that the Department of Public Service and Administration did on minimum anti-corruption requirements. So this raises then doubts on whether the strategy of minimum anti-corruption capacity is working, or whether centralized capacity, for instance, in office of the Premier, should rather be created. So that is one conclusion that we draw from the few indicators that we used under the principle of professional ethics. Going to the next principle. Still with professional ethics. There was a steady increase in the number of cases of financial misconduct over the last few years, from about 400 in 2001-2 to over 1,000 in 2009-10. Another indicator is that very little of the money involved in financial misconduct are ever recovered, only 12.8% in 2009-10. So what this tells us is that the incidence of financial misconduct is increasing, whilst the systems and procedures to deal with it are patchy. And these indicators, to a large degree, talk to each other. So the fact that so little money is recovered says capacity is patchy. The feedback that we get on the National Anti-Corruption Hotline also says there's perhaps a problem with capacity in departments. And then the audit that the DPSA did on minimum anti-corruption capacity also says that there is a problem with implementation of that policy. Going to the next principle, economy, efficiency and effectiveness. The expenditure performance of national and provincial departments are fairly under control if one looks at total expenditure, even though there are fairly big variations on departmental level. So in this fact sheet, we have decided to go to a little bit more on the detail level and looking at the economic classification of expenditure and see how the expenditure was with regard to capital expenditure on capital assets. Now, if there's under expenditure on capital assets, it shows that there's a lack of capacity to properly cost capital projects, to plan and manage those projects from concept to detailed planning to implementation, and to plan the cash flows of the project over its life cycle. Now, if we look at the numbers, if we look at provincial budgets, the under expenditure ranged from 1.8% in the Western Cape, which is very good, to 36.2% in the Eastern Cape. With regard to the national budget, there was 41.7% under expenditure on capital expenditure for the departments falling in the cluster of financial and administrative services, to 4.3% under expenditure for justice and protection services. Going to local government, the norm applied by the National Treasury in case of capital expenditure is that the variance between budget and actual expenditure should not be more than 10%. And in 2009-10, 51 of the municipalities out of 283 fell outside that norm. Now, the expenditure performance of departments should also be considered in relation to production of outputs. And in our M&E system, we look at the output performance of departments. In the 2009-10 evaluation cycle and the 2010-11 evaluation cycle, we have evaluated 51 departments. So the sample in this indicator is 51 departments. Between those 51 departments, they planned to produce 9,000 outputs. Between those departments, they have achieved 5,400 outputs. That's a performance of 59%. Now, the following observations can be made from that. The average performance is 59%. Departments spend nearly 100% of their budgets, but they only produce 59% of their outputs. Now that suggests some inefficiency in the expenditure. Another observation that can be made is that departments list hundreds of outputs in their annual performance plans. And with so many outputs, it's very difficult to arrive at an overall judgment of performance. The reader of those reports get lost in the details. And many of those outputs are not final outputs, or not directly related to services and benefits to citizens. Many of the outputs in those annual performance plans are interim outputs, leading to the final. So a better judgment of performance would have been possible if departments reported only on a few key outputs or outcomes. So what we are saying is that the annual reporting and the annual performance plans of departments have not made the shift yet to the outcome level. Going through development orientation, on the slide there, we have a number of positives and a number of negatives. And these are country-level development indicators. Now, the number of one of the big positives is the number of beneficiaries of social grants is now over 14 million. But apart from that, research suggests that these grants make a bigger contribution to development than just the income-enhancing effect of the grant. Another indicator is the access to basic services. And the National Planning Commission Development Indicators Report show also good progress there. The access to potable water is 93%. The access to sanitation is 80%. The big negative, and I think is well known, is that the unemployment rate is 25%, and that's on the narrow definition. The key question is whether the developmental state, through the public service, has the capabilities to deliver on its promise. So apart from these development indicators, one also needs to look at the capabilities of the public service. And the Public Service Commission evaluates capabilities through its M&E system. Now in 2010-11, we have evaluated 10 agriculture departments against this principle. The indicator that we used is how well departments implement development projects. And agriculture departments implement many of those. One big program in the agriculture department is the Comprehensive Agricultural Support Program. And those, the effectiveness of implementation of those projects plays a role in the final score in this indicator. And the agriculture department actually scored quite well. The score that we arrived at was 93%. But if we now look at we also did a program evaluation on the Comprehensive Agricultural Support Program. And if you look at the criterion for success that is applied, the main criterion was the delivery of the main output of the program. One of the main outputs of that program is infrastructure on farms. As soon as you start assessing those projects against outcome indicators like successful farming, then the score would have been much lower. So what we are saying is, though we have scored these agricultural departments quite well with regard to capabilities, if we need to go to the outcome level, the capabilities that will be needed is of a different order. One will need even better capabilities. Another indicator that we have used for the capabilities of the public service to promote development is the ability of the public service to evaluate, learn from evaluation findings, and improve programs. So if we can learn from our own implementation, that we think is a good capability to have. And we have assessed department's capabilities through a series of meta-evaluations that we have done. We have done a meta-evaluation the expanded public works program with an investigation on the land reform program, and we have just completed one on all programs of the Department of Social Development in the 22 rural and urban nodes, poverty nodes. And our experience with those mediations is quite positive. Quite a number of very good mediations are available in the public service. They contain good recommendations. So if departments should act on those recommendations, they could improve their programs substantially. So actually quite a good picture from the ability to evaluate oneself. All of those meta-evaluation studies were based on evaluations commissioned by those departments, and most of all of them was done by outside. It was commissioned to outside consultants. It wasn't done by the department themselves. Going to the next principle, services must be provided impartially, fairly, equitably, and without bias. Now, the one indicator that we are using, that we have been using for quite some time, is compliance with the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act. For the 2009 mediation cycle, where our sample was 30 departments, the average score was 50%. But what we see is departments on this assessment either do quite well or they do very badly. So half of the departments were actually rated excellent, and three was very poor, and I was in between poor and excellent. But we have also we should also look at the other side of that principle, and that is the equity side. And there we quickly want to refer you to three indicators. But I think it's even the National Planning Commission also emphasized the huge inequalities in South Africa. So these indicators just add to that point. If you look at the expenditure on district level, per capita primary health care expenditure, then that ranges from the lowest district of 215 rand per head to the highest district of 811 rand per head. And that gives you a ratio of normally four times. So it's four times the amount of expenditure in the well-financed districts compared to the lowest spending districts. If you look at another indicator, the municipal per capita spending by province, then municipalities in Gauteng spend 6,600 rand per head, whilst in a province like Limpopo, they only spend 2,000 rand. That also the highest spending, high spending province is also Western Cape. Now that reflects the big metros in these provinces, but nevertheless, it still shows that if you live in the Limpopo, less money is spent on you as a citizen there. And then the third indicator there, with regard to education. Now, with regard to education, spending has been made fairly equal. But if you look at education outcomes, only if you look at the good mathematics passes at the 50% level and higher, then only 400 high schools out of 6,000 produced half of those good results. And all the other schools were responsible for the remainder. So these indicators show fairly large inequity still in the system. But one should recognize that to achieve equity will require changes at the societal level and economic structure of the country, not just the public service. But we want to argue that the way the public service is arranged can make a huge contribution to this objective. However, when even applying the same norms and standards across the public service, norms and standards with regard to the performance of staff, expenditure, level of service standards, we want to apply the same norms and standards across the public service. That will require innovative approaches and deep going changes in the culture and capabilities of public service across the system. So currently there are still huge differences between different parts of the public service. Going to public participation, Commission annually assesses public participation using the M&E system. We have added two evaluation cycles, 2019 and 2010-11. We have evaluated in those 2 years 51 departments. And the three standards that we have checked was, is there policy on public participation? The score was 41%. Are departments soliciting inputs from the public? Are there procedures for soliciting inputs from the public? It's quite a good score of 80%. But are those inputs responded to and used? There the score again is lower, 47%. So the majority of departments indicated that they do use some system of public participation. But the major weaknesses are there's lack of feedback to citizens, and there's lack of reports from departments to show that they have actually considered those inputs and that those inputs from the public actually made a difference in how they designed their services. We've also looked at a study by paid for by the European Union on the ward committees. Their finding was that ward committees are up and running but not making an impact on municipal decision making or are not effective channels for engaging with the public. So our conclusion is that public participation in South Africa is still too much of a public relations exercise. Inputs are still solicited from the public, but there is little evidence of how this influences policy. So the public participation model in South Africa is still emergent, and alternative approaches need to be tested in practice. And perhaps as an example, the Public Service Commission a few years ago published a toolkit on citizens' words, which we haven't tested much in practice. And that is one model that can be used to test an approach. And design then over time a unique participation model for South Africa. Accountability. The first indicator that we are referring to is the compliance with the head of department evaluation. In 2019, 16 heads of department qualified to be evaluated. As at the end of October 2011, only two were evaluated. This is the worst non-compliance rate the BSC has ever reported since the inception in 2001. At provincial level, 72 heads of department qualified to be evaluated, and 40% were evaluated. The compliance with the Commission of Performance Agreements was 78% over the last three financial years. So the performance agreements are submitted, but evaluation against those performance agreements doesn't happen at the end of the cycle. Then going to the performance of the departments with regard to audit opinions, on national level, 66% of the departments obtained unqualified audit opinion. On provincial level, it was 72%. And on local government level, 54%. Transparency, the indicators that CSC is using in quality of annual reports and compliance with the Promotion of Access to Information Act. With regard to annual reports, the presentation of these annual reports are already good, 98% source. With regard to content, the score was only 40%. And what that means is there's a long list of things in the Treasury requirements of what should be in an annual report. And if you read through that list, all of those things are inferior, so the score there was lower. Then with regard to reporting on performance, the score was 81%. That 81% simply means that the partners are broadly complying with the key requirements in the Public Finance Management Act, which says that reporting should be done against predetermined objectives. Now, the Auditor General has also recently has started to audit the quality of the information, and those audits are not giving such a good score as 81%. So if one looks at the quality of the performance information, the score would not be 81%. Going to compliance with the Promotion of Access to Information Act, we looked at three requirements of the Act. The one is that each department should have appointed a deputy information officer. Each department should have a manual on access to information. And lastly, procedures for access to information should be in place. Now, with regard to the appointment of a deputy information officer, the score was 61%. The manual on access to information, 35%, which is a very low score. And then the department should have procedures for access to information, 62%. On the other hand, we also looked at the Open Budget Index. It is an international body who assesses many countries' budget information. And South Africa scored the highest score, 92%, of 94 countries surveyed. So the PFT has some observations about annual reports and whether annual reports enable the reader to arrive at a summary judgment of performance. Like we said under Principle 2, there are so many output indicators reported on that one can get lost in the details. But that doesn't mean South Africa is not transparent. There's a wealth of information available in South Africa. But it is probably not user-friendly as it can be, both from the perspective of gaining access to information and interpreting the information. And to explain that a little bit, I think for a person like me, who is a researcher, I can get information, South Africa, from that perspective, is, as like we say, there's a wealth of information available. But if I'm just a member of the public, I would have a little bit of a struggle to get access and to interpret the information. Going to Principle 8. Again, this graph is based on our MNE system. The average score was 51%. But the interesting thing of this graph is the low scores and the high scores. The low and high scores say quite a bit about compliance to HR practices and the quality of compliance. So if one look at the recruitment policy, the first bar there under the red one, all departments have policies, so the score was very high, 91%. But if we assess departments against how long it takes them to fill a post, then the score is very low, only 4%. When we ask is there any management reporting on recruitment, then the score again is quite high, 75%. But management, we don't necessarily see evidence of any management response on those management reports, so the score was again very low. When it goes to skills development, departments do have skills development or workplace skills plans, so the score is quite high, 88%. But those skills plans are not always based on a thorough needs analysis, so the score immediately lower. All of those activities in the plans, all the training activities in the plans are not necessarily implemented, so the score again a little bit lower, 62%. And very few departments actually assess the impact that they are making with those skills development activities that they are offering to their employees. So we are saying they are compliant, there is compliance, but the quality of compliance is sometimes to give a little bit of detail on the on how long it takes to fill a post. We have to say 51 departments. That for those 51 departments, the number of posts that we have to set are 807. It takes 163 days to fill a post from date of advertisement to date of the date the candidate is in duty. And our standard is 90 days. But interestingly, it takes departments 189 days just to advertise the post. From the date it becomes vacant to the date of advertisement. And the reason for that is that the establishment records are not up to date. The heads of component are not always sure whether they can go ahead and advertise the post and fill it, because they are not sure whether that post is funded for. So they must go through a process to get a certificate that they may go ahead and advertise the post, and that also that decision making process takes time, especially in the province. The rest of the bullets on this slide I've already explained by means of the graph in the previous one. So to make a conclusion around HR practices, overall the compliance levels are increasing, but quality of compliance is poor. And the question that one needs to raise now is the development of HR policy, reporting on its compliance, appears not to have generated the outcome expected, that of a properly recruited, well-managed and well-motivated public. Additional reliance on HR policy or standard management practices has not maximized human potential or generated creative workplaces. Now again, and perhaps it is setting a high standard, but we are arguing that as soon as you look at outcomes, the outcomes of all these policies, then the outcome performance seems to us not good. And then lastly, going to representativity. We are saying nothing new here with regard to race. The representativity targets have largely been met. With regard to women, gender, the initial target few years ago, 35% was met. The target was then up to 50%. That 50% have not been met, but there are quite a bit of progress with regard to women representativity also. So the only target that there's a real concern is the representativity of people with disabilities. And it seems then that the Job Active strategic framework and the improvement employment and retention of persons with disabilities in the public service, issued by the Department of Public Service and Administration, has not yet rendered the results. So to highlight some of the conclusions that we have already made in the presentation, the strategy to refer national anti-corruption hotline cases for investigation to departments is premised on the assumption that the departments do have the capacity. Both the feedback rate on cases that we have referred and the DPSA's assessment of minimum anti-corruption capacity suggests that the departments do not have the capacity. So it is then a question whether that strategy on minimum anti-corruption capacity is working, or whether one should rather, because that policy or strategy says departments must create capacity, whether one should rather than create things like capacity. We think that good progress has been made with performance report. The Auditor General audit of performance against three set objectives also make a huge contribution to this. However, department reporting has not yet adjusted to the outcomes approach. Good progress has been made to improve the capabilities of the public service with regard to development orientation. However, as soon as one sort of moves the standard of assessment, the outcome, then capabilities of a different order would be required. With regard to equity, to apply the same norms and standards across the public service would require innovative approaches and deep going changes in the culture and capabilities of the public service across the system. The public participation model in South Africa is still emerging, and alternative approaches need to be tested in practice. A major focus will have to be placed on increasing the compliance levels with the HOD evaluation of data control. And lastly, the development of HR policy and reporting on its compliance appears to not have generated the outcomes expected that of a properly recruited, managed, well motivated public service. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I will allow some space for the commissioners if they want to comment prior engagement by the committee members on the report. But I must indicate firstly that we want to, I'm sure we, on behalf of the committee, it's important for me to welcome the new commissioner, Commissioner Nzimande, who is appearing for the first time with us, and we really appreciate that there is a good presentation that has been done. I must go back to the comments that Commissioner Mthembu has actually done. I thought maybe from the side of the committee, I thought the committee will give the Public Service Commission a standing ovation in terms of, you know, that agreement, where they have gone, and in fact the understanding that now exists between the Public Service Commission and the committee itself. But I just saw the committee members staying quiet and silent, as if they don't acknowledge that we have done such a major inroad. And I really want to appreciate that as the committee now, we can be able to actually, on behalf of Parliament, liaise in the overarching approach in terms of our oversight for the public service. You know, when we talk about the state of the public service, we are going to have a good interaction. And I must indicate the presentation as well, you know, says a lot. I think we have good and significant progress on this aspect, and this will assist us to have very good discussion. And this is good progress, and I must say, I think we are excited. I am excited. Are you all not excited, members?
No, we're
in shock. Okay. Okay. Can I then request that if members want to say anything, they can, but starting with the commissioner, if there are some comments on the presentation, which is quite clear, you know, unless there are other comments, I will go to the engagement by the members that are shocked, starting with the member Williams. Yeah, the most shocked.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I would also like to congratulate the Public Service Commission for an excellent report, because it really gives us an idea of actually what's happening across the board. In particular, I want to talk about slide 20. For instance, this is about the good HR practices. The existence of skills development plans is a very high figure at 88%. Now, previously we would get that and assume that training was happening that could be measured and there'd be an impact because of such a high percentage of skills development plans existing. But from your report, it's obvious that although there might be the plans in place, there's the impact of the training and even what is happening there with that training is very little. And I think that this type of report is giving us a clearer picture that departments are complying to the administrative side of what's required. In other words, then you just have to come up with a skills development plan. But the actual implementation of these plans and, you know, the purpose of these plans isn't actually being done, and this report reflects that, and that's excellent. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Honourable Williams. Honourable Nyakembe.
Thank you very much. I think you were not looking at us when the presentation.
presentation was made, we were all smiling. So we didn't want that to disturb the process by clapping hands. We're smiling and nodding our heads since the start of the presentation. Just one point for me. I think it's on slide 20, which Honorable Williams referred to, linked it with slide 23. My assumption is that the existence of a skills development plan and a needs analysis is not only meant for the current public service, but I think the internships and other things, in my view, those are supposed to be included if they are not included. And now I'm raising that and link this slide with slide 23 on the representativity. Whilst I understand this might be in terms of the employment equity that you need to reflect this, but I think the element that is lacking, we have a huge number of young people who are unemployed. I think the representativity, even if it might reflect in terms of race and other things, but if it can be captured, young people in each category, whether it's on blacks, on whites, on colors, but I think it's very much important for us to know that in the public service, even if there are different races, but at the same time, the number of young people who are absorbed, I think it will be some kind of an indication of what is it that we are doing in regard to youth. Because I'm raising this because of the what the President said on the state of the nation in relation to look at young people being absorbed in the process. Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks, Honorable Nyakembe. Honorable Frank Helgley.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you very much to the Public Service Commission, and congratulations. We are very glad that you've accommodated our suggestions. Thank you very much. It is really a more comprehensive report we have now. I just want to make two comments. The first is on anti-corruption. Chair, we've said this many times, but corruption is a cancer destroying the public service. And therefore, it is very disappointing to see that departments do have policies, but they do not implement them. I think that is the main problem. The Minister of Public Service has released how many anti-corruption programs, but it doesn't seem to help. In other words, they are not really implemented. And then the second remark I want to make is the National Development Plan of November this year really addresses the public service. Commissioners suggest that the public service be professionalized. And now I'm looking at the slide on human resource practices, and I see in the development of HR policy and reporting on its compliance appears to have not generated the outcomes expected, that of a properly recruited and managed and well-motivated public service. And I think once we can really professionalize our public service by appointing qualified, well-motivated officials, then many of these problems we see in this report will be addressed.
Honourable Manana.
No, thank you very much, Chair. Well, indeed, thank you, Chief Director, for the comprehensive presentation. Well, Chair, it would seem the whole question of compliance remains a problem. And at some point, I think as a committee, in the absence of the PSC, we'll have to deliberate further on this matter and see what measures can be put in place and what could be our role as Parliament in ensuring that we address the issue of compliance. as well, Chair, we are not getting as to what form of action is being taken, especially to those who fail to comply. Because whilst I appreciate the submission by Honourable von Skalvik of professionalizing the public service, because you could have skilled people, well-qualified people in the system, but who just refuse to comply. What then is the remedial action? I think we should start and we should begin talking to that. Those who do not comply, what measures are there to ensure that if you do not comply, this could be the possible penalty. But I think as well, Honourable Nyagembe has covered me on the issue of demographics. So would want to have a sense as a committee as to the issue of representativity of young people. I think it's very important. In the future, we really request that we get those figures, how many young people in the public service. It does not necessarily have to be in terms of which department and all of that, but just as they have put it here, would also want to know. I mean, young people constitute the majority of unemployed persons in this country, so we would want to have a sense as a portfolio committee going forward. But over and above that, I think this is good work, and of course, we are excited as a committee. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Honourable Manana. There are aspects of issues that you are raising, which part of it has got a bit of a model that we have practiced. For an example, when we had heads of departments or teachers that did not sign the performance agreement, we can discuss. I actually take your point, Honourable Manana. We would need to discuss and concretize those aspects, because if we have this report and it's just discussed and there it goes, therefore means it was a futile exercise to even engage the Public Service Commission to come up with this approach. And therefore, I think the matter that you're raising will have to be concretized. I remember when we had an oversight visit to the Public Service Commission, we did have some agreement in terms of how we approach other aspects, dates, you know, and sometimes, because even if you want to do something, if you do it after 10 years, once you've received, it's meaningless. But I think the approach or the intention for us to have a report drawn this way, therefore meant that we do need to complement the whole aspect and come up with results. Those are the tips that the Honourable Member is talking about. We will actually engage you on that further, Honourable Manana. Thank you. Honourable Mohale.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also join those who are appreciating this report to say that it is good work on progress. My input would be around public participation, slide 15. Maybe where my suggestion would be, maybe in the future, if there's any department which the PSC thinks can be a model department of public participation, let them just mention that and give us their route, their successes, because if it's only 51 departments, maybe they overshadow one department which has got a good model, if there's such a department. Because coupling it with slide 18, bullet 2, where we are talking about annual reports, that, but then how do the members of the community then, can they understand what is written in the annual report? So to say, maybe if we could get that sense that out there people do read the annual reports and ask questions about them and do understand the functioning of different departments, maybe that would assist us. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, honorable members. Well, if there's no one else, I think there's some few comments that I just needed to actually highlight based on the presentation that was done. The presentation is key on the issues of unemployment, which has came out. And members will remember also when we're dealing with the MDGs, doing the oversight on cluster through this process of looking into the MDGs and the achievements that were there. The issue of unemployment did come on board as well. And if we remember very well, we've got key objectives, five areas of the objectives of government, where one of them was the issue of job creation. And therefore, what comes out from various reports is that there's unemployment. And therefore, it means that is a key issue. Actually, what I like about this report is that to make our discussions very relevant, you know, as this committee, so that we discuss about content issues and issues which are quite a problem. From the side of government and from our side, as we're overseeing government and those weaknesses and areas of non-compliance that we're seeing, you know, if the government has actually committed itself in terms of five main objectives, where job creation is critical, and therefore we consistently see, you know, the unemployment as presented by today's presentation, it therefore means it's a concern for the general committee, the entire committees of parliament. And therefore, something has to be done. And therefore, we do need to send those directives or, you know, those pointers to all the committees that in terms of the oversight work, in terms of, you know, even when we go to oversight visits, whatever, those are aspects that we need to concretely look into. That's one issue. The other issue is on the NPC. There's the aspects of the NPC's comments that are within the report that comes here. The NPC did do a presentation last week as well, and I've realized that there are a lot of information that actually links or ties with what the Public Service Commission have done, you know, in terms of their work. I just need to, on that, find out the comments from the Public Service Commission in terms of those reports, the interaction. Is there maybe some collaboration work, or have you planned, or is there anything that has come between yourself and the NPC? I'm actually raising this because as Parliament, you know, the meeting that we had, for an example, this morning with the Chair of Chairs, is that we are going to embark again on the cluster approach like we did with the MDGs as this committee, but now assisted by all other committees and the leaders of the clusters of the other committees to focus on the NPC report cluster-wise before we even embark on the public service seminar. And therefore, it's important for me to just have an understanding how have you worked with the presidency along Minister Manuel's report on the NPC. Okay. And then the other issue, the third one was, you know, it comes up very clear. It's something that came out in the BRRR process that we embarked upon as committees of parliament, all of us jointly, that, you know, the commissioning of project to consultants is overwhelming in government. It's a lot. You know, everything is just commissioned. We're not even sure now how much capacity do we have. You know, that assessment of the capacity you talked about also, that aspect in this report. And therefore, possibly, it's one of the issues that would really at some point want to flag. You know, because there are a lot of, you know, entities, Honorable Fanskalk, we will talk about that are middle people or middle persons, you know, who don't do anything by the entities existing. But their role is just to commission somebody, get a report back. And therefore, you end up not knowing whether you do have those entities or not. And if you do have, what is it that you have? Where does the whole capacity of those projects goes to? And therefore, I think it's one other aspect that we need to reflect, you know, as something that we definitely have to focus on. There are a number of committees that have raised an issue of this. Some of the things they can be, but we've got a feeling that you know, almost everything now is just commissioned to consultants, and you know, we are really panicking. Some of the consultants are just in business. They don't care about the objectives of the government. They are looking into profit and all other stuff. And we're not even sure whom do they share this information. They might possibly, we don't get the latter part of the information, but the information goes somewhere. And you know, all those aspects, we really want to know, when we talk of this developmental state, is it honest, truly a developmental state, or what are the aspects that you believe might erode that aspect of being a developmental state? One issue that will concern largely ourselves as the public representatives, the members of parliament that are here, is the issue of the public participation. You know, I know that parliament is looking into the model of the public participation. You know, Honorable Fankalvi, the issue of mass mobilization for us is very critical. You know, because once we don't have this public participation, we do, you know, quite easily find members of the community banning the library. You know, because there's no conscientization along that aspect. And therefore, I'm sure it's one area that needs thorough interrogation, rather than us also leaving it to Public Service Commission or the reports that we're seeing. You know, because public participation is not anchoring properly from the side of government. We think it's going to be elevated from the side of parliament, you know, with due consideration that the tool of public participation is being remodeled, you know, to actually achieve. But we think we need a complementary role, particularly from our side as well as parliament. Because that aspect, if we lose it, we might do all the work, but if we lose that aspect, it's not fair, particularly ourselves who are representing all those people out there. I think the last aspects are the ones that the members have actually raised, and I'm not going to repeat, but just to indicate the issue of representation. We talk about it a lot, particularly on the side of disability. It has came up as a major concern from our recommendation in the BRRR. We've actually said it's scandalous that we're unable to meet the targets of disability. And I think in our approach for next year's program, we're going to move away from complaining about that, but come with concrete, you know, ways of forcing government to meet those targets, because really we can't keep saying we didn't meet targets as if we enjoy to talk about that. At some point, we really need to do something, and we believe government does have the capacity to do that, and if they don't do that on their own, we definitely have to sort of come up with that approach, you know, of ensuring that they actually comply with that, and it's part of our priority projects. I mean, items on the agenda in terms of dealing with it, and we want to believe that our first term for next year will be dealing with those aspects which we could not actually address, and one of them is that one. Safe to say, you know, we believe that we're moving towards the discussions that we need to carry now. You know, we also feel confident that now we're going to be the Public Safety Administration Committee that drives issues of the public service in the correct direction, and we think this report gives us confidence that we're moving towards that direction, you know, and we want to then agree that there are aspects that we can even start utilizing now that comes from this model presentation, which we can utilize. We can even influence the state of the nation address in terms of driving those changes or those weaknesses from the side of government or departments of government. Surely there is now work, tangible, concrete, that we can be able to do, complementary, you know, as all institutions with that buzzword of this committee of collaboration. And therefore, we do appreciate that. I don't know from the side of the Public Safety Commission on issues that the members have raised there, if you are ready to actually take them on board.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Firstly, we would like, on behalf of the Commission, to appreciate the comments or positive comments which have been made to us, and we think this is quite encouraging. I just want to respond on some of the comments made generally. Firstly, I think the issue raised by Honorable Nyenkembe, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, that problem, as well as Oral Manana, of demographics is very, very important. And I think it's an issue that in our next report, I hope we will take note of these officials. We need in one way or another to indicate to it, you know, that is now a demographics in the public service. A week before last, we met a delegation from Bavaria. That was your counterpart in Bavaria, the Portfolio Committee on Public Service. You know, one of the issues that they brought to us as we were exchanging is the fact that now they've got the demographics of the public service. And an important issue that is emerging there is that their public service is actually aging. You know, you have got a number of people from 50 to 60. In fact, they're even thinking of, increasing, the retirement age. Now, what came to my mind was the fact that now in South Africa is the opposite. Generally, we know that now is a youthful society, 60 plus. But we haven't as yet came to a point where we're able to get a picture. The question of age, you know, the youth in the public service as versus to the old people. And I think this is very, very important. And especially given unemployment, the challenge that we are having, you know, in society. So we want to take that note very, very seriously, and we hope that in future we'll be able now to come up with a picture. I mean, when you talk of representativity, it's not only the question of race, gender, but also the question of age, because we are having a youthful society and want to see to what extent is it representative. So we take note of that very, very seriously. I want also to comment on the issue raised by Honorable Williams, Honorable Van Schaavik, as well as to a certain extent the chairperson around the human resource issues. I think you have made a very, very important point around that. But I want us to tie up this with what Honorable Manana has pointed out. This question of compliance, you know, simple complying and noting what is happening without actually going to the content, and especially in the process of outcome, substantive issues, it does not help us. But what is encouraging is the fact that Honorable Manana said, now, I think we've got a responsibility as a portfolio committee. Right now, these issues need to be taken up. Because we as a public service commission, you know, we are outside. We are expected to look at the public service objectively, impartially, and properly, and supply you with facts, you know, with something that is substantive. But now you have got, as a portfolio committee, in terms of the constitution, you can take on the executive, you know, because we've got an oversight over the executive. So now if we'll appreciate this complementary role, where we give facts as they are, without taking any position, because that is what the Constitution mandates us. But it is pleasing if now the committee sees it as its responsibility to move away simply from complaining, as the chairperson pointed out. We cannot keep on saying this and that and as if we enjoy it. What is it that we are doing? So I think we'll continue providing, you know, information that is well resourced, that is well, which is accurate, so that now you will take it up. And I think with this complementary approach, we'll be able to move closer to that. It's the same thing like the question of corruption, you know. Every year we give information, there is no capacity in the departments, or there's some unwillingness. But what is it that we are doing? So that now at least next year we must show some progress. There must be some progress. So I think such comments are quite encouraging. Honorable Mohale, I think the point that you've made is very, very important too. But now, if now you say, for example, you say there's 47% or 41%, what it means, we need to look at both the negatives and the positives. You can't just say, okay, it is very low, 41%. It is good, it's very low. But now it means in that lowness, there's something that is good. And what is that thing which is good, which is not being done by other departments? In other words, we need to be in a position as a public service commission to also identify good practices, you know. From that small percentage, something is very good. What is it that is very good? Why that particular department are able to do that thing? What is it that can be learned? And then we share this thing, and then we're able to share this information. So I think that observation is also very, very good. And I think we've taken note of that, that we must be able to share with the committee those things that are positive or good practices, as it were. And then lastly, Chester said, you have raised an issue which I think, in our view, we need to consider it seriously in a form of conducting a project. I would say we are going to have a research project around this issue of consultancy commissioning. It's a very, very serious issue. It's a very, very serious issue, especially in the context where we talk of a developmental state. Because when we talk about developmental state, we're talking about a capable state. There can be no talk of a developmental state in the absence of a capable what? Government or state. Now, if now we keep on commissioning consultants, what does that mean? It suggests that now either, and it ties up with the whole issue which have raised about the NPC, what you have said and what as well Honorable Fascari has pointed out, the whole issue of professionalization. It says something about our recruitment approach. It says something about our selection. It says something about the kind of people that go into the public service. If now we'll actually, on the one hand, we talk about the bloated public service, but at the same time, we've got what? Consultancy. We commission people. It says something. So, Chairperson, we have identified a very, very critical issue, and I think we have to consider a possibility of actually having a project research around the whole issue of consultancy. How much goes into consultations? Why is it being conducted? Is it really necessary? And then we look at it as well as the capacity, because we cannot really talk of a developmental state while we're busy spending a lot of money getting people in the private sector. And at times, with some of the consultants, they don't come with new issues. They just look at what is your thinking. They tell you what you expect them, what you expect as a client, than actually assisting us. So we will take that very, very seriously. Lastly, just before the NPC released its vision and plan on the 8th of November, 11 o'clock November, in the year of our Lord, 11. The NPC met with the PSC around this issue of recruitment, selection, etc. Because there's some of our work which was taken by, which actually was cited by the National Planning Commission, and wanted to get our views around the whole issue of the comments that they made. Now, unfortunately, there wasn't sufficient time, but we have agreed that once the report has been released, we'll come up with a clear response as a commission, because some of their findings suit very well with some of the recommendations that we have made, especially the consultative report which was given to the committee. We think some of the recommendations that are there can go a long way in addressing some of the challenges in the public service around recruitment, selection, and ensuring that we're having a capable, well-staffed, you know, public service which is capable of actually carrying out the developmental agenda of a democratic government. So we take note of that, Chairperson, and we think that we'll interact with them and we'll update you what is our thinking around that. Because we have been told that we still have got 6 months of consultation. So by May next year, before May next year, we shall have met with the commission and we'll make our our position quite clear. I know that the commission demanded, we've just agreed, you know, informed that we needed, in fact, a workshop as a commission to look at those issues in public service and come out with a well-formulated response as our input. So we take note of that point, Chairperson, and we hope that we will be able to make a meaningful response. Thank you very much.
Are you all covered?
Just a few minor areas, because the Chairperson has actually responded to the issues that members have raised, and thank you for the opportunity. On the issue of compliance versus implementation and outcomes, I think it is good to place on record that in the presidency there is a department of monitoring and evaluation, and there is work that is going on between the Public Service Commission and that department regarding issues of shifting now the models to address the outcomes approach that the government has adopted. So there is going to be organizational performance monitoring, and also at the level of HOD evaluation, we will be shifting the paradigm now to look at outcomes. The second issue is basically a quick one around consumption of annual reports by citizens. There is a Batupili requirement that departments have to distill issues from the annual report and prepare citizens' reports, user-friendly citizens' reports. In fact, the Public Service Commission is also busy with a project where they are looking at whether departments are complying with this Batupili requirement. And I can just share that the report is going to come out showing a very lackluster performance on the part of departments in terms of preparing citizens' reports for consumption by ordinary people in the public. And then in terms of the model of public participation, yes, the Chairperson is right, there's something good that is happening in the 41%, but we also need to mention, I think we've mentioned before, that the Public Service Commission, in collaboration with the Portfolio Committee on Public Service and Administration some years ago, developed a model of public participation, and we called it the Citizens Forum. The uptake in terms of that model has not been as much as we would desire as the Public Service Commission, but we have been encouraged that in Mpumalanga, for example, the Mpumalanga administration has approached the Public Service Commission through the commissioner based in Mpumalanga to implement the citizens' forum approach. And I think it will be possible once the identified areas where this toolkit will be applied. Once that has been done, I'm sure it will be possible to come back to the Portfolio Committee to say this is what works and this is what perhaps we are going to be revising as the Public Service Commission. Thank you very much.
Just thank you, Chair, for your warm words of welcome as well. Chair and Honourable Members, the Chair and the Deputy Chair have covered most of it. Just one quick one, Chairperson, that you mentioned in respect of commissioning work. I think this will fit in very well with some of the groundwork that we started doing, specifically looking at the agencification of the public service, the tendency to have so many agencies. I think the component that you've lifted of commissioning the work to private practitioners perhaps could form an added component of that work already. Just the last one, just to welcome what the Honourable Member Mohali has suggested about highlighting good practices wherever they emerge. I think it is very important, because in that way then we can
let everyone know that it can be done better. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Commissioners. I wonder if there's anything to raise. Otherwise, Honourable Members, as you can recall, that we still have another report before us. Can I then proceed? Thank you very much. I think it was quite fruitful. We really enjoyed this engagement. But just in summary on this one, to indicate that there are some reports that are before Parliament that I think the Public Service Commission can utilize. This is that aspect of the collaboration. I think the BRRR report, that is the budget reviewal report that Parliament embark on annual basis, I think they would serve as a good information for the public service, because we've got recommendation from all committees in terms of issues that we believe that need to be followed up. There is also the MDG cluster reports. I did invite the Public Service Commission to sit on the cluster. It's unfortunate that only one cluster, they managed to sit on one. But it would be interesting if it could have been more interesting if they sat throughout the clusters, because the outcome of, when you see government reporting in a cluster fashion, they start to collaborate among themselves while you also have an overarching picture on issues that are raising. So the MDG cluster report that the committee did an oversight on was also one of the models where we were able to pick up things per cluster, very critical things that, forms part of the impact on the public service and administration, and we could have drawn some aspects that need follow up, based on what comes out, from all those clusters. One would wish that maybe those reports can be utilized by the Public Service Commission in terms of analyzing the trends and the weaknesses, the strengths as well, in terms of what is coming up, because they all impact on one area, which is the public service and administration, and of course, moving forward, we would need to formalize that, packaging of those reports, sending them to the Public Service Commission, so that we don't reinvent some the wheel wherever the wheel have gone. Okay, Honourable Members, I think now we'll move to the second part of the agenda, which will be the second presentation, but we really appreciate this report. The report will be focusing on precautionary suspensions, as it was already issued out. It's already submitted in the booklet version. I'm sure members have seen it. It was distributed. It's already tabled in Parliament. And we had some snapshots of interviews here and there as well. And we will be taking through the report as it stands. And over to you, Public Service Commission.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. The presentation will be led by Ms. Matari Mashau. As the Chairperson has indicated, the report was tabled, and taking a cue from what the committee required, it was tabled, and then the day after, the Public Service Commission embarked on media releases and interviews. But just as a way of introduction, the Public Service Commission did conduct a similar research study in the year 2000 around the management of precautionary suspensions in the public service. And in that case, the study was just wall-to-wall, covering all government departments at national as well as a provincial government. So this time around, the focus was on a smaller sample, because it was more or less a follow-up. The sample was smaller, but the findings also very profound, because it was indicating that if we were to go into every department again, the cost that is involved would be phenomenal. The departments that would be found wanting in terms of the time that they take without complying with the prescribed 60 days in respect of precautionary suspension, again, it would be overwhelming. But in the case of 10 departments, it's still shocking, so members will be more shocked than they were before. The research was prompted by a failure by departments to comply with the scripts, the prescribed 60 days in respect of precautionary suspensions. Again, observations by the Public Service Commission that it was very costly because people go on suspension on the basis of full pay, and posts cannot be filled until those cases are finalized and the decision is taken one way or the other. So the commission was very concerned about that trend where money just gets paid to people while they were sitting at home. And we also worried and wondered whether departments do at all consider the option of transferring a person to another component or another region, because it is an option that is available to departments. We also wanted to look around circumstances under which employees were placed on precautionary suspensions, because we suspected that sometimes the circumstances do not really warrant a precautionary suspension. So, and we also wanted to look at best practice outside of South Africa, and we are satisfied that the South African model that is being followed now subscribes and complies with the legal regime and the constitution in terms of the dictum that a person is presumed innocent until proven guilty. Because some of the examples we are finding, Kenya, for example, the practice shows seems to indicate that a person is presumed guilty until proven innocent, because the money is withheld, and then when they are cleared, then they get back whatever was withheld during the time of the suspension. So we are satisfied that the approach in South Africa is constitutional, follows the law and existing agreements in terms of negotiations. And we do make some recommendations around. The strongest one for me would be the one where we need regulation where departments extend, if there is valid reason to extend the precautionary suspension. We want that to be regulated through departments going back now to seek permission from the Minister, Department of Public Service and Administration, because at the present moment the extension is happening willy-nilly. You know, whether they're extending for 3 months or 10 months, nobody is controlling that. So we are recommending very, very firmly that needs to be controlled. But with that, I think I would like to hand over to Matar.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. Because the Chairperson has started off with the first few slides of the presentation, I'll just go directly to the methodology that we used for the study. We looked at a few departments as compared to the study that was conducted 9 years ago, and this is purely because we don't have capacity. We could have done a lot more, but obviously we could not, and we thought we should have the report quicker. We looked at two departments, Department of Home Affairs at national level as well as Department of Public Works, and we picked three provincial administrations, and in those provincial administrations we tried our level best to compare departments that have similar names. In KwaZulu-Natal we had Department of Transport, Department of Education and Department of Public Works. In Mpumalanga we have the Department of Education, Department of Public Works, Roads and Transport. In other words, we had two departments in Mpumalanga. And in Eastern Cape, we had three departments, Department of Education, Transport, and Department of Public Works. And as the chairperson has said, we compared what we had in South Africa with what was happening in the United Kingdom and in Kenya. And as the deputy chairperson has said, we found that in Kenya, they withhold the remuneration of people who are placed on suspension, but in South Africa we cannot do that because the constitution does not allow it. I will proceed now to the key findings. In respect of the reasons for precautionary suspensions, we found that the sample departments indicated that they put people on precautionary suspensions for different natures of charges. And if you were to compare this with what is stated in the resolution, some of the reasons are really not really very serious. And the following were cited as reasons why people were put on precautionary suspension. They were suspected to have committed financial misconduct, insubordination, failure to bank state money, theft or fraud, misuse of state property, drunken driving, corruption, sexual harassment, sexual assault, unauthorized expenditure, gross negligence resulting in loss of state money, and violation of tender processes. Some of this alleged misconduct are serious, but the others are not really very serious. For instance, if a person is alleged to have been driving drunk, maybe state property, you really cannot be putting such a person on suspension, because obviously you can put them to do other responsibilities as opposed to driving. The second area of finding related to how long departments put employees on suspension. We found that most of the departments did not really comply with the 60 days that is prescribed. The suspension lasts longer than 60 days, and even within those 60 days or the period exceeding 60 days, we found that the dismissal procedure would not have been instituted. And on average, the sample departments took more than 3 months to conclude investigations. And sometimes the investigation does not necessarily lead to the disciplinary hearing, and this will be explained at a later stage. In respect of the Department of Transport in KwaZulu-Natal, they reported that they take 10 months before disciplinary hearing can be conducted. And in Mpumalanga Department of Education, they reported that on average, precautionary suspensions lasted for a period of 2 months. And this is the shortest period of all the sample departments that participated in the study. And the reasons that were given by the participating departments on why precautionary suspensions went beyond the prescribed 60 days were cited to be as follows. Unavailability of representatives of the employees charged, because in most instances the employees will feel uncomfortable to proceed with the hearing without their representatives. Sometimes the witnesses are not available on the day that has been set for the hearing to proceed, and in some instances the officials indicated that they did not have the information that they require. In other words, when the hearing is supposed to proceed, they would say, we requested this from the other party and it was not provided, therefore we cannot proceed because we are not ready. And in some instances, it was indicated that the people that are supposed to appear before the disciplinary hearing could not speak the language that was being used and there was no interpreter, so they have to postpone. And some of the reasons were also cited as employees that were facing these allegations would be booked off sick, and therefore the presiding officer will be compelled to postpone the hearing in most instances without a specific date, because they wouldn't know when the employee would be fit enough or healthy to come back and face the disciplinary hearing. And in some instances it was indicated that when a person is facing the disciplinary hearing within a department as well as the criminal process in court, the days would maybe run concurrently, and as such, the disciplinary hearing gets postponed. And the other reason that was cited was that the presiding officer was requested to recuse himself because there were allegations of the person not being proper to sit as the presiding officer. And in respect of the precautionary suspensions in the sample departments, we checked as to whether they were reviewing these periods, and we found that the reviews were done on a weekly basis and sometimes every 3 months. And every 3 months obviously would really be beyond the 60 days that is prescribed. The next area that we looked at was whether the department was considering transferring employees instead of putting them on precautionary suspensions. Of the departments that participated, we found that only three consider transferring employees as an alternative to proportional suspensions. The rest really just put the employees on proportional suspensions without looking at that option. And I must say that the alternative of putting people on transfer depends largely on the nature of the misconduct that is alleged to have been committed, and I'll explain later on this. With regards to the Department of Transport in KwaZulu-Natal, the department indicated that they look at the potential financial loss that could be incurred by the employer if the employee is placed on precautionary suspension. In other words, they would rather have a person transferred to another component than have the person stay at home. Department of Home Affairs indicated that they assess the image of the department in concerning transfer of an employee. In other words, they check whether the presence of the employee at work would not damage the image of Home Affairs. If that will be the case, then they would rather put the person on precautionary suspension than transfer the employee. Department of Public Works at national level stated that the transfer of employees of placing them on precautionary suspension is also considered, but they also look at the profile of the employee before the transfer is effected. Now, in respect of this, the PSC overall found that departments were not effectively using the transfer as an option for employees who were found to have or alleged to have committed misconduct. The next area that the Commission looked at was the employees that were placed on precautionary suspension for the two financial years. We, in total, the number came to 293, and for the financial year 2008 to 2009, the number was 103, and for the financial year 2009-10, the number was 190. And the people that were placed on precautionary suspension that were at level 1 up to 8 totaled 228. And those that were at level 9 to 12 totaled 46, and SMS members were at 19. This is for the two financial years that we were looking at. And the figure of the people that were at the lower level obviously is very high, and we assume that this is because there are a lot more people that employed at lower levels. But it could also be that it's easier for people to be placed on precautionary suspension when they are at a lower level, because they would not be as vocal as people at higher levels who would tend to be more educated and informed about their rights. Before I speak to this slide, I would like to apologize quickly that the figures, we made a typographical error. The figures are slightly different from the amounts that you might be having in your hard copies. The two sample departments indicated that they have spent a total of almost 5.5 million for the two financial years. And the eight national departments indicated that they have spent more than 15 million for the same period. And for the two periods collectively in the sample departments, the total amount that was spent was 21 million. We further looked at the role of labor relations components. Maybe before I go to that, let me quickly speak about something that we have not mentioned here, which appears in the report. The total amount that was spent for the financial year 9-10, which is in the report and is not reflected here, that was reported to the Department of Public Service Administration, comes to almost 45 million, in fact, more than 45 million. And unfortunately, even when you look at that report from the Public Service and Administration Department, it could be incomplete, because some departments had not submitted their reports to the Public Service and Administration Department by the time we requested the information. So the amount is huge, and sadly, these are people that would not be providing any service to the departments during the time that they are on suspension. The Public Service Commission also looked at the role of labor relations components in the management of precautionary suspensions, and we regarded them as being key role players in advising the managers, especially in the procedures that should be followed. However, it was established that not all supervisors and labor relations components are knowledgeable about the disciplinary procedures. and also the fact that managers really leave everything in the hands of labor relations companies when it comes to the crunch. And this is a major concern to the Public Service Commission, because it's one of the key roles that managers should execute when they are dealing with human resources. The PSC also established that the following were outcomes of some of the discovery cases that were concluded during the two periods under review. We had 153 cases that were pending by the time we concluded the study. And obviously, these are cases that could have been pending from the first financial year and not necessarily during the second financial year. 52 of the cases ended with dismissals, which is very encouraging, because obviously it means that the allegations that were very serious to have put a person on precautionary suspension was serious enough. In 18 cases, the employees were not found guilty. In 11 cases, the employees appealed against the sentences that were meted out. In 7 cases, final written warnings were given. In 4 cases, employees were demoted from the level where they were to a lower level. And in 3 instances, the departments indicated that charges were not linked. And this is a waste of money, because the person would have stayed at home maybe for more than 3 months, and charges are not laid in the end against the employees that were put on suspension. In 3 cases, the charges were withdrawn against the person after the process had commenced. In 2 cases, a fine was imposed against the employees. In 2 instances, the presiding officers received the resignations of the employees that were facing charges. And we found that this is of concern, because the presiding officers are appointed to look at the case, listen to all the facts, and make a decision on the facts, and not to receive resignations. Resignations are supposed to be received by HR officials in the department. And we found that in 2 cases, a 3-month suspension without pay was meted out as a sanction to the employees. And in 1 case, a final written warning was given to the employees. Because we, in the commission report that was given in 2002, which the deputy chairperson has mentioned, the guidelines on management of suspensions was one of the recommendations. And in the guidelines themselves, departments were encouraged, and this is in 2002, departments were encouraged to produce internal policies that will guide departments on how to deal with suspensions. Unfortunately, although this was produced in 2002, now in the previous financial year when the commission was conducting the study, we found that of the 10 sample departments, only 1 department had a policy, and this is the Department of Transport in KwaZulu-Natal. 3 departments indicated that they had the policy in place, but when requested for a copy, they could not produce one. The rest of the departments indicated that they do not have the policy, but they rely on the resolution as it stands. And the resolution doesn't really provide the step-by-step on what needs to be done when a person is placed on precautionary suspension, so we're not certain how they manage to follow that resolution. The PSC feels that the departmental policy is a tool that is very important, that, and that each and every department should have, because it will cover a number of issues and also assist the managers and the labor relations components when it comes to this area. For instance, when a manager decides to suspend an employee, there should be reasons in the tool, in the policy, which will guide the manager on what type of offenses should a person be placed on precautionary suspensions for. Or if a person needs to be transferred, what are the aspects that should be looked at for a person to be transferred? And if there is supposed to be an extension of the period for precautionary suspension, there should be reasons as well that should be followed. These are the issues that could be covered in a tool for the department, that is the internal policy. When we were collecting data on this issue, departments indicated that they're facing a number of challenges. And among others, they felt that there is poor monitoring of precautionary suspensions, And this results in people being absent from work, being paid, and the others having to take the extra responsibility of performing the functions that were supposed to be performed by the person that plays on professional substation. It puts a burden on the person that's at work, and normally, obviously, this person would not be getting extra remuneration for taking over the more the extra responsibilities. We also got information that the challenges were because the people who are supposed to be responsible for this area of labor relations are not trained, and yet they are expected to really assist departments in dealing with precautionary substations. There is also poor compliance with time frames by investigators and presiding officers. Normally, investigators are given time frames within which they are supposed to conduct an investigation, formulate charges, and inform the head of department on what needs to be done. And also, the presiding officer is supposed to be given a period within which the hearing is supposed to be conducted and concluded with a sanction. But there is no compliance with respect of that. The PSC established as the contributory factor a high level of inadequate competence of presiding officers as well. In other words, the people that are supposed to be presiding over cases, they are not aware with issues that they're supposed to be looking at, and this tends to lead to people having to confer with others to be able to handle the situation. And the same as employee representatives, if they are not conversant with what needs to be argued, they would have to confer, and this takes time and leads to the extension of the period of precautionary suspension. The recommendations that the Commission has come up with to be able to address some of these issues are that departments must develop their own internal policies through the assistance of Department of Public Services Administration. And this is basically a repeat of what the Commission proposed in 2002. Employees must attend training on disciplinary procedure, including management of precautionary suspensions, because obviously it has to be understood that each and every employee that is assisting in this process must understand what is expected of him or her. And the other proposal or recommendation that was made by the Public Service Commission in 2002 was that a database must be created, and we found that databases were not created in most of the departments. For instance, when we asked for information, they would produce individual files of people that were placed on precautionary suspension, and that was problematic because it means that even themselves in the department, they don't know at any given time as to how many people were on suspension, whether suspensions have been lifted, or whether the cases have been concluded, unless they go through the fiscal files of the individual employees. And that's what we propose, that a database and the profile of the issues that lead to precautionary suspensions being extended should be put in this database. Precautionary suspension cases must be recorded in detail, and reviews conducted often, preferably on a weekly basis. In other words, if there needs to be an extension, then it should be stated why there has to be an extension of the period. And due to the high cost implications, the department must immediately prioritize the finalization of the outstanding cases. In other words, the cases that have been outstanding from the previous financial year until now should be finalized so that people should return to work or face the sanction that would have been meted out. The next recommendation is that the labor relations unit must play an active role in keeping track of all the cases of misconduct and ensure a consistent manner of reporting on the management of precautionary suspensions. There must be a database of capable presiding officers and investigators internally within the department and centrally through the DPSA and offices of the Premier. We know that the DPSA some years ago attempted to have a database of people that can be used. But what departments explain is that when they try to tap into that database, most of the people that are identified would indicate that they are not available for one reason or the other. But a solution that is being used by some of the departments is that they conclude sort of an informal agreement between each other. They help each other. If there is a case in one department, they would help. They would be helped by the other. In the case in the other, they would reciprocate. The next recommendation is that there should be a requirement for departments to explain what measures departments have taken against managers who delay conclusion of disciplinary procedures. And obviously this will be within the Public Service Act provision, section 16, and this can be done by the head of department, and in the case where the HOD is implicated, it can be done by the minister or the NEC. The next recommendation that the commission has come up with is that departments must, before placing employees on precautionary suspension, seriously consider transfers as an alternative to justify the extension of the, sorry, the placing of the person on precautionary suspension. And obviously the transfer of the employee would have to take into consideration the issues that would have been regarded as a serious enough to place a person on precautionary suspension. For instance, in the case where a person has been suspected of sexual harassment or sexual assault and the person is in the Department of Education, you would not want to transfer such an employee to another department or to another school, because that could be a problem in itself. In conclusion, the PSC remains concerned with the low level of compliance and respect of management of discipline resulting from the lack of understanding of the disciplinary procedure in the public service. One of the factors that remain noticeable throughout numerous studies that the PSC has conducted on the human resource management practices as well as labor relations is that the department do not have policies in place. And if they do have policies, they really do not sensitize employees or key role players on the procedures that are contained therein. The PSC trusts that through the study, it has highlighted the need for departments to maintain accurate records of all employees on precautionary suspension, and there is a dire need to expedite investigations and finalization of cases that are pending, so that you know people that are witnesses and documents that are supposed to be produced as evidence would not disappear. Departments also need to improve on adherence to the prescribed time frames. That will result in the reduced cost because the more people are placed on personal suspension for less periods, the more costly it is to the state. Thank you.
And thank you very much for the presentation. I don't know if can we immediately move into the discussions or are there additions from the commissioners or any comments? And if not, honourable members, that was the presentation. Any engagement? I've seen one hand. Is there any other hand? Okay, Honourable Williams.
Thank you. I just need some clarity. I'd like to know whether the collective agreement between the organised labour and the departments, if that collective agreement doesn't specify the disciplinary proceeding and the times that these things should take place, and if it does, then why isn't that being adhered to? You know.
Did you get that one? Okay. Thanks a lot.
The resolution that...
Okay, maybe let's take all of them and then we'll just respond at once. Honorable Nyakembe, you're next.
Thank you, sir. My assumption is that the departments that do not have policies, maybe they are reflecting in this detailed report, but I think if they are not, I think it's important to know which are those departments, because there can be no department without disciplinary procedures that are in place, because each department is an employer in a way. I think it's important to know which are those departments. I think generally the picture is like there's no, even if there might be procedures in place, there's no adherence to those policies. For instance, in Ekurhuleni, Gauteng,
Substituents who stormed in the council chamber whilst the council was in process. It took almost a year for that disciplinary hearing of those to be finalized, because workers will go to a disciplinary hearing and say, no, I want an interpreter. But when the worker is given the charge sheet, that's when he or she has to indicate what will be his or her requirements on the day of the disciplinary hearing. I think the observation by the PSC of labor relations practitioners, in a way, some of them, they might not know what are their responsibilities, because you can't have somebody in the labor relations unit and then those people, as the report says, they don't understand what is it that they're supposed to do. I mean, why are they employed in the first place? What criteria was used to employ people who do not understand the responsibilities in a particular area? So that's why earlier, Chair, I was saying that I think it's important to get those departments that do not necessarily have these policies in place. Thank you.
Honorable Manan, followed by Honorable Van Kelsey.
No. I'm covered, Chair. I think the recommendations actually seek to correct everything else that has been identified as a shortcoming and challenge.
Okay, proceed, Honorable Van Kelsey.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, I can understand why departments are hesitant of using transferring employees who have been suspended. Because if you look at the reasons for precautionary suspensions, financial misconduct, etc., then would it not be a risk to transfer some of those people to other departments where they could just as well make the same mistake, if you want to call it a mistake? I think I can understand why departments do not choose to do that.
Yeah, it's a point that you're raising. Yeah. Okay. Any response? Okay, there's a hand from Honorable Msimang at the back.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Yeah, I just want to comment the Commission for this report, especially for highlighting the reasons for which people are suspended. A number of them are very flimsy indeed, and I think people simply suspend haphazardly. I think this is a very professional approach, and we should not, the employers should not be resorting to suspensions on such flimsy reasons. It should only say that they will suspend if there is indeed evidence that they will be tampering with witnesses or with documents, because a lot of money is lost, and there are and the people who remain doing the job are overworked. Because nobody can be, these people who are suspended cannot be replaced. So it causes a lot of inconvenience and should be resorted to only in critical cases. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Members. Anything else from members? If there's nothing, let's proceed to Public Safety Commission.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honourable Members. I'll start off with the one relating to departments that are not complying or that are delaying. They are recorded in from page 17. This is chapter 3. And for me to go through them, I think I will take a bit of time. But there are departments that are really having a lot of people that are on suspension. For instance, Department of Home Affairs has 33 on page 18. And Department of National, this is for levels 1 to 8, and Department of Transport in KwaZulu-Natal has 22, and so forth. So those are the departments that are delaying for the various levels. And in respect of non-compliance with the resolution, unfortunately, because some of the reasons that are given are really reasons that show that it's on the side of the employee. So labor does not really take matters to the PSCBC. But in instances where resolution of the PSCBC is not complied with, they rush to say there is a dispute because the department is not complying. So non-compliance is something that can be taken to the PSCBC, but it will obviously depend on who is at fault. And the comment on the handling of funds, transfers really does not necessarily mean that you transfer a person to do exactly the same work that they are doing where they are charged. If you transfer an employee that is alleged to have committed any misconduct, you transfer it to another component which is not necessarily due. For instance, you can transfer a person to do filing as opposed to handling funds. I think those are the questions that were asked. Thanks. The others were comments.
Just a quick extension to that one. The question about transfers was not asked tied to the specific cases. It was asked independently, and the commission found that departments do not consider the issue of transferring at all. So the two are not tied. The offences and the question about transfers are not linked. The questions were asked independently. So we found without any doubt that departments do not even consider the option of transferring.
Okay, seeing that we have actually zoomed into the discussions, and I'm sure members are satisfied with seeing the report, we're getting responses. I'm sure we then need to, okay, just a few things, maybe one thing. Before that, we requested that the department must have a representative. I'm not seeing anyone except the PLO. Okay, but the deputy minister was told standard practice is that most issues, particularly when the Public Service Commission is presenting, they do affect the department entirely, and therefore it doesn't make sense if the department is not around. It's important for them to be here so that they pick up issues that actually relate to them directly, and therefore that should be a standard practice. And we did discuss this with the department in terms of the Public Service Commission's reports, and therefore I would really need to get a response. We're not very sure what's happening with the department these days. It's a little bit dodgy. We don't know whether it's these new changes, but we don't see the department, and we have raised this, I'm sure, in more than one meeting. I'm worried if the department is not in this meeting. I think if we convey that message to the department, we cannot have these reports and discuss them when the department that you're overseeing is not even part of the meeting. It's a major concern. I think it will be part of the information that we send to the department, but also from the side, Tibelo, you must make sure that when the Public Service Commission is here, just remind them, you know, that they have to be part of this meeting. Otherwise, it creates a disjunction in terms of the discussions that I hear, because other things are expected from the side of the department. Okay. One issue that I needed to raise is that, of course, the Public Service Commission would remember that we have commissioned a task of this nature, you know, of the findings on the suspensions, expulsions, and so on and so on, which we were actually expecting that the Public Service Commission, the bargaining council, the department, and the Auditor General will give us feedback prior to our public service seminar. I would just need to find out what does it mean then, this report in relation to the task. Have the institutions commissioned, discussed, and I'm actually seeing the fact is that now this sort of a specified report around the same assignment, what does it then mean for us? You know, have the institutional consent met, discussed, because it's one of the issues that are part of the seminar, you know, part of crafting issues that we'll be focusing on the seminar. If we can just get a response on that, including the fact that maybe part of why we commissioned that, and part of this report maybe, we do, as, I mean, government does lose almost all cases that are put forward. Is it because of the weaknesses on the legal representatives that government have? I don't remember. You know, I'm sure that report will help me to say these are the cases that are won. I don't remember a government winning these cases of suspensions, of expulsions. They don't win. Is it the weakness on the side of our policies? You know, because if that's the case, we need to address that. Is it a weakness on the side of the legal representatives that we have? You know, or what is it? What is the problem? Is it within the system, the entire system itself? And that is a major issue. Once we have this report, those questions must be answered. And if not, then the whole report that have, you know, the whole assessment from the public service needs to be to then come before the committee so that we can be able to move forward with the knowledge and understanding whatever you think that we need to do better. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah, with regard to the issue that you've raised, it forms part of the items you presented to us during the period when we were having our threat planning workshop. Now, what I recall is that we have taken note of that, and then we decided that now the next plenary, which is going to be held second week of December, we are going to finalize those issues. But in principle, we have agreed that all those issues, I'm sure about 10 of them, if my mind serves me well, they warrant a research project. So some of them will be form part of our financial for our work plan for the financial 2011-12. So a decision is still going to be taken in our next plenary session.
Thank you, Chair. And with reference to the workshop, Honourable Chairperson, our interpretation of your request was that you know, we need to be addressing the so-called vulnerability of heads of departments, if my memory serves me well. And it was in that context that the Commission had to look at the amount that the state was losing, also taking on board the consultative report that will be an item for the workshop or the seminar. But that report, my understanding is that it would be pitched at the level of HOD. So it's a separate matter. It is not associated with this particular report. It's a separate matter pitched at the level of HOD, whereas this one was looking at the different levels in departments.
Yeah, okay. Just to correct that, it's not necessarily vulnerability of HODs, though the matter was also raised from that aspect. It is that it is the issue of the loss of skills at that level of HODs. And then, yes, it can look into vulnerability, but as well it can look into what are the cases that comes along, you know, because it may as well happen that the head of department is not doing what he's supposed to do. And therefore, we need a balanced discussion once we come to that. And the only way that we can balance that discussion is to have correct facts, you know, because we'll look into what has happened and what comes from that. You know, do we have a lot of heads of department unable to execute their tasks and what they're supposed to do? And do we also have them being vulnerable, perhaps, because they're starting to come as if they're mostly vulnerable, and we really need to become factual when we discuss a matter of that nature. But the overall issue as well, which was picked up, was are we retaining the skills at that level? And if not, what are the main issues? Maybe it's because they don't do what they're supposed to do, or maybe they're also vulnerable. We will only be able to interpret that once the report comes, but I understand your response in relation to this report, and thank you very much on that. Any other issue, Honourable Members?
Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, I would really think that today it was a fruitful day, frankly. Both reports were good. We will say, especially also the first one again, because you know that's the gist of our work, and we are very satisfied and glad as a committee that now we're going to focus on content issues. But we'll also communicate with the Public Service Commission in terms of the NPC's report, the processing of it on cluster arrangement format that the Parliament is going to take on board. We will develop a project plan around the seminar together with the NPC's report, and we'll share it with the Public Service Commission so that we can also agree how do we want to participate in terms of this process moving forward, in the light that your existence will actually be of help to us once we actually have that kind of an engagement. At this point, honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, acknowledging that we were having amongst us Honourable Williams, Honourable Nyakembe, Honourable Manana, Honourable Mshefo, Honourable Msimang, Honourable Mohali, Honourable Malulege, Honourable Van Skalkwyk, and there was Honourable Hill Lewis who was here. I would like to really thank the Public Service Commission, in terms of the work that you've done. Thank you very much. We believe that our collaboration in terms of work will make a difference in terms of the impact on the public service and administration. Thank you very much.